the council is not committing itself to anything other than allowing the process to proceed forward by this resolution. That is the explicit requirement in the stage two protocols, is that in order for RIDE to go through this process, they want to see demonstration of municipal support. And so this is more of a clearinghouse step than a substantive step. But I, once again, reserve, you know, judgment to revisit those regulations and converse with council that has greater expertise in the subject matter.
Okay, so, and Bill, I'm sorry to have to put you on the spot with this. Perhaps someone from the school administration can get your solicitor on the phone and see if he or she is available for this question. But if that's not possible, so Bill, is your advice to us is that what we are doing is simply voting on yay and nay on allowing this process to go forward. From once we make that vote, let's assume that we approve this, the logistical aspect is going to be at the beck and call of the administration. There would be no error on our part of the city council voting on this one way or another without these documents being completed.
Thank you, Councilman. That's a very loaded question that I'll try and at least parse into the parts that I can answer. From a practical standpoint, the short summary is yes, this is more of a procedural kind of gate opening action that allows for a full vetting and a completion of whatever may not be complete to occur. I cannot say with the certainty that you're asking about any other errors, because I need to review certain protocols, but my recommendation is that the risks presented by proceeding here are curable by the council, that the council ultimately holds the ability to request or not the subsequent actions that would follow RIDE's review. So the vetting of the application is in RIDE's hands. And so whatever imperfections there are or protocols that weren't followed will be flagged by the RIDE process. And that would essentially, and I don't know if it would end, but it would enter either a cure period or something that RIDE would be the ones engaging with the committee and the department on. And if it can't be cured, then it is implied that we wouldn't be back to finish the subsequent steps that would be required for the entire project to come to fruition. I wish I could give greater, you know, full clarity to ease your mind on, you know, the full risks of present. But what I can say with certainty is that this council is in control of whether or not we go to next steps of the process. And RIDE will then complete their process. If something is not satisfiable to RIDE, we will learn about it, and that will impact most likely the actions of what this body may do or not do in the future.
Okay, so I'm going to just kind of restate that, if I could, that it appears from what you said that we're okay to go ahead and vote on this, anticipating that, or with the understanding that all of these documents will be produced and presented by the school committee when they do whatever they got to do.
Yes, that is a fair characterization, in the sense that we do not control their application. We are providing a resolution to, in concept, support their application and everything and the process playing out. The results of that process are yet to be determined, and we will have future opportunities to make the decision that's before the council at a later date as to whether or not to make the request to fully proceed to the project or not. And even at that point, it still requires General Assembly approval and the approval of the voters at the end of the day. So there's many steps that follow. This is the one that opens the door to the steps that would be vetted by RIDE is the next one.
So all in all, in your opinion and to your knowledge, we would not be in any violations of any laws as such by voting on this.
I am not aware of proceeding with the resolution before you as violating any law.
Okay. Mr. President, if you would indulge me for 1 minute, I think. Oh, I'm not done.
Could I have one more question, Councilman, and then I'd like to just everybody else has their hand up as well. So.
Thank you. Thank you for indulging me. I know that I've exceeded my time limit a lot. This would be to Director Schaefer. I truly am not in understanding. On page 2 of your position paper, Director, the last paragraph, it says a risk of not proceeding with the first step is that the General Assembly might enact more generous pay-as-you-go or reimbursement incentives that currently apply. And Warwick will have missed getting in that key. I don't understand the first part of it. At the risk of not proceeding, how could not proceeding, and maybe it's just a typographical error, I don't understand, I can't comprehend the risk of not proceeding would enact, would the General Assembly would act a more generous pay as you go or reimbursement incentive. I don't understand what that means. Could you clarify that for me, please?
Well, the governor put in his budget in the middle of January, Councilman, additional incentives that are really not totally clear what the details are. And the General Assembly is going to act on that proposal in one form or another. And what that action will be, we don't know. So the deadline is here by regulation, as I understand it. And if you're not in the queue, so to speak, you're not going to be part and parcel of whatever the General Assembly deliberates on. And we'll all have egg on our face if something comes out that's a lot more generous. But I think, as I said later, and as Solicitor Walsh has been telling you, this is, you've really got two bites at the apple. One, it goes through the stage 2 process. And the second is, presumably they come back to you, the school committee comes back to you, maybe this spring, maybe some other time, and then you get to make the decision with the mayor as to whether you want to bring to the people a referendum to issue the kind of debt that we're talking about that would have to be issued to build 2 new high schools.
Okay, but I still don't understand what that line means. A risk of not proceeding. We don't do this. We say, forget it. We're not doing it.
Well, then you're not going to get in the queue as part of the application process.
Right. But this says that is the first step that the General Assembly might enact more generous pay. If we opt out, we don't do anything. How does that impact us for a more generous pay? I don't understand that.
Well, I mean, I gave you a scenario on costs based upon what currently applies, essentially, and with a very hefty, the lowest cost includes the best possible incentives. But suppose they change the rules. We will have missed the boat if they don't have that pending before them.
Okay. Mr. President, I think I see the school department's attorney on here now.
Correct. He's just joined. If we could just ask that one specific question, and then I'm going to go to Councilwoman Travis next, who has been waiting patiently.
Sure. My question is, have you heard the conversation on this?
I have not.
Okay. So let me just get back to my documents here. So it has been stated that the requirement for stage two is that the ride requirement, well, I'll just read the whole thing to you. It says, upon the preliminary determination by RIDE that the project meets the criteria for the stage one of the necessity of school construction process, the application proceeds to stage two. Item two, stage two of the process requires districts to complete a feasibility study, cost projections, design plans, and site work. So in asking some questions about this, it was stated to us that the site work has not been completed yet. That portion of this process requirement has not been completed yet. And doing some quick research today, admittedly, last minute, I'm under the impression, well, I need to clarify, does this item two, does this need to be complete in its entirety prior to us voting on it? My position here with this is a few things. Again, I'll reiterate, to protect the city council from being in violation of something, to also protect the school department and administration in such that RIDE doesn't determine that, wait a minute, you know what? They voted on it and it wasn't complete, end of story, done. So I'm looking for reassurance to us, the city council, that yes, we are within our legal parameters of voting on this.
So Councilman Lattiser, I mean, I'm a little loath to obviously give the council legal advice. That's not my role and certainly wouldn't be my purview. But with that said, my experience with RIDE, having gone through this process with a number of districts, is stage two is still a relatively fluid stage. A lot of things change between stage two and stage three. So to be honest with you, the short answer to your question is, I don't see an issue with the committee voting if in fact the site work isn't completely done. That's a non-researched opinion, which is always somewhat dangerous. But with that said, I've been through this enough. I feel relatively comfortable saying I don't think there would be any. I mean, it's noted for the record. It's on record that process, to what you're telling me, by the way, I have no idea, hasn't been completed. But again, I do know, dealing with RIDE, that stage two piece is very fluid. A lot of things change from one to two and then from two to three.
So, okay, I'm sorry. Could you just state your name for the record, please?
Sure, I apologize. It's Andrew Henius.
Okay. Mr. President, we have two legal opinions over there. I have no reason to question that or challenge that. So that's it.
Thank you very much. Councilwoman Travis.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. I have a lot of issues and concerns with this whole thing. And I think I can touch base with everyone who's spoken already. And especially when we're saying like $350 million for this project. And even if it is a couple of years from now, we all know it's gonna be a lot more than $350 million. We see that with every project we ever had. I know Councilman Foley brought it up about the building that we just heard that we got a big increase. It's going to be a bigger increase, whether it's because of the cost of material went up or labor went up, but it's going to be a lot more than $350 million. And the public out there is concerned. Now, I know we are talking about two schools and we have to talk about it because that's what's in front of us. But they all want to know, why isn't it just one school? How can we afford two schools when we got less kids in the school system now? And what are you going to have? Two schools with not many people? Because the fact of the matter is the taxpayers are not going to be happy with a $300 or $400 increase in their in every year. I mean, right now they're going crazy worrying about the rehab we're going to have this year. So now they're looking, saying, well, we're going to get hit with that much money from, they're going to move. You know, I want a new school, at least one new school. But I mean, the project's calling for two, and I understand that, but I don't think that was the right thing to do. I think we should have tried. We would have been easier to sell it as a one school project. I think we're going to have bigger problems. I think sometimes, I'm not saying the school committee or the school administration, but they don't realize that when we do a budget, it's not just the schools. We have police, we have fire, we have public works, we have all the pensions and all the raises or whatever. We have a lot more than just schools. Now, I have a granddaughter that's only in the middle school, so I'm concerned about high schools for her, but you gotta be considerate for the people who are gonna be paying for this. And I can't foresee the Warwick taxpayers saying that they wanna pay another three or four. We have seniors that don't have any kids in the school system. You think they're gonna think this is wonderful? We have a lot of issues. We gotta really think. I know the schools are in bad condition. They've been neglected. When we were, a lot of us were talking about it all the time for years and years in pub and every budget, I always said that if I'm writing the check, I want to be able to say where the money's going. Money went everywhere else but where we wanted it to go. And a lot of it was maintenance. Now, I don't want to keep going on. A lot of the people said some of the stuff I wanted to say before, but we have a lot of issues and we got to really think this out. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Councilman Gephardt.
Thanks, Council President. And thanks to the members of the school department and committee for being here. And I appreciate especially Mr. Gothberg and Mr. Testa and Superintendent Danbrook, the detailed responses over the weekend. So I've had a number of calls on this from residents. Surprisingly, so far, a lot of calls in support, you know, even despite the large price tag. You know, Pilgrim was built in 62, Tollgate in 52. We are now in 22. So it's only appropriate that on the 50th and 60th, so 60th and 70th, I don't know, on the anniversary, 72. Oh, I wrote the wrong number here. Thank you. It's only appropriate on the anniversary that we're here looking at this. You know, I think a number of members of the council have pointed out some really valuable points. You know, that there's risk around the price, the cost increasing between now and when we build the school. And I 100% agree with that point, that these schools are never going to get less expensive than they are today. With interest rates headed up, costs continue to rise, labor rates continue to rise, it's only going to get more and more expensive to do what we already know we need to do. So the first questions that I sent to Mr. Gothberg and to the superintendent were, why can't we build one giant school? I've heard that from constituents. I've heard that from others. I've had people point out, you know, Cambridge High School and a bunch of high schools in Massachusetts have north of 2,000 students in their enrollment. But we aren't those places. And so far from the research that I understand, you know, both the city and the school department have done, siting is a massive problem. So you know, you already know what the traffic is like going to, you know, Warwick Vets or going to Pilgrim or going to Tollgate on any given morning. Just imagine a school that had twice the number of students and twice the amount of traffic. There's a number of other considerations around that I thought were really, really thoughtfully conveyed to me. Okay, if we can't consolidate and do one big school, what if we just do one at a time? I've heard that raised as well. Well, with a 50 and a 60 year old school, when can you do one at a time that doesn't overlap? So we're going to do one, and in 20 years, we start the next one. Well, now we've got a 60 to 70 year old school that needs to be replaced immediately thereafter. And we talked about the rising costs. We talked about interest rates. What's it going to cost us then? And what is the incentive scenario going to be when we look at it then? So, you know, these are just some of the things that I've been mulling over. It is certainly a big pill to swallow. It is a massive number. The entire city budget is, you know, on the order of what the cost of these two schools is. But when you think about the lifespan of the schools that we have, you take $350 million and imagine these two schools last us another 50 years, you're talking about $7 million a year over the next 50 years. That's the sort of distributed cost of these schools over their lifetime. That's just 2% of the annual budget. So, you know, you have to break this down. I know that these are long-term investments in the city. You know, I think we will have an opportunity to get more into the details. You know, I've heard several of my colleagues say, hey, we'd like to see some more of the packet. We'd like to see some more of the detail behind this. I agree with that. But in sort of doing some more research into the process itself, right? And hearing Solicitor Walsh talk about where we are, right? This is sort of a gut check. You know, if the city council said, absolutely not, we don't need any schools, we could just vote no tonight, and then, you know, it's done. But I think there's a lot of support that we do need new schools. We're coming to grips with the reality of what that actually means for both ourselves, for the city, and for the residents who will have to pay for these. But what we're here to do tonight is to say, yep, in theory, we are in favor of this. We want RIDE to go through the application, make sure that our ducks are in a row. We want to keep looking at the finances. We want to be creative and see if there's other funding options available to us. And then we'll come back here and hopefully we'll have significant resident input. We'll have people for, we'll have people against, but we got to do the right thing for the future students, for the future families who are going to move here. And this investment would show a strong commitment to the community on behalf of the community and for the future. So I encourage you at least to support tonight, and we can get into the details later.
Thank you, Councilman. Councilman Sinapi.
Howdy. So I know actually a good chunk of the people now involved weren't necessarily around for the prior discussions on this over the course of several years now, long time, in fact, where there have been some important conclusions that were reached previously that aren't really the main topic of tonight, nor really should there be. But it does address some of the concerns raised by some people. For instance, unfortunately, the renovation of Vets by several school committees ago kind of torpedoed the option for a super high school where you just have one. That would have been not only the spot for it, but it was perfect. Once that got renovated, it was all over as an option, really. The idea of having two schools instead of one, so it, whether it be renovation or new schools, that was in part based on when we had the expert who was a national expert, he might have been a global expert, but at least a national one. They had a cross-section of the community together. So students, teachers, administrators, legislators, you name it. And overwhelmingly, the desire was to address both schools, not just one, for a lot of reasons, among them being parity. The fact that when you build a new high school, new families come in, and you don't want everybody to just rush to one section of the city, because that's going to come with a whole host of other problems. And you don't want the continued perception that you favor or give all the benefits to one area of the school districts, because for those who weren't around for the prior cutting of schools when they were deciding which ones to close. That was a huge issue and people were upset. And it, at least the perception, regardless of what was actually going on, was that the school committee and the city cared about one part of the city, not the other. You don't want that. It does no one any favors. It only hurts. And while Pilgrim is in not great shape, to put it very gently, it's important to know that Tollgate has some pretty severe problems, among them windowless classrooms that become virtually uninhabitable on hot days. Like it just becomes a non-starter. I was in some of those classrooms. I know it's not good. My siblings who went 12 years after me still ran into problems where on some days it was too hot to have lessons. So huge chunks of the building just reported to the auditorium for the day because that was the only option. So it's not just Pilgrim's so bad that it needs to be fixed. And yeah, Tollgate, you know, it's whatever. It's like, no, there's problems that are so severe at Tollgate that learning becomes a non-starter on some days, not to mention potentially dangerous as far as being in the building. And I'm sure there's plenty of teachers that could espouse on all the issues at length. Because I remember when we had these meetings in the past, they did. It's not good, to put it gently. So to do one building and not the other, unfortunately, doesn't really seem possible, even though it would be ideal both financially and logistically. I think there's no doubt in that. But just try to keep in mind that it's likely that most, if not all, of your concerns that you may have were actually addressed by prior instances where everyone came together. So I'm glad everybody's willing to follow up and get the documentation and whatnot. Please rely on that as opposed to taking a firm stance that, well, they don't have it right at their fingertips now, so it's a no. Because, I mean, odds are it's already been figured out potentially years ago. You just need to give them a moment to actually get it at hand. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. Are there any members of the City Council who haven't had a chance to speak? Would you like to speak at this time? Okay, I'm going to go to the two council people that have their hands up for the second time, and then I'd like to open it up to members of the public. Councilman Ricks.
Thank you. I'm going to make a suggestion here when it comes to taxes. We're going to need to replace these schools sooner or later. It's really better to do it sooner because what do we think is going to happen with interest rates? Do we think that they're going to return to historic lows? Or do you think that based on inflation, that these interest rates are inevitably going to go up? Do we think that the labor shortage is really going to get all that much better? You know, looking years and years down the road as opposed to in the shorter term? It goes back to one of those classic sayings that the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. The second best time to plant a tree is today. Beyond that, let's just think about some of the consequences of if we don't act. I've actually surprisingly, in contrast, to say it a little more precisely, to my colleague from Ward 9, I've actually been receiving a lot of phone calls and emails in opposition to building these new schools. Concerns about tax rates. And there are some valid concerns there. I think that the public should be more educated on this, and then they'll be able to see the big picture. In fact, I'm hearing from a lot of people who live in the area immediately surrounding Pilgrim High School, and people are concerned. And rightfully so. Taxes, it is a valid concern. That's something that I think that this city council can address through some other means. Obviously, we aren't going to get into all those details at this time. But for the folks on the other side of the city, something that we should really keep in mind on taxes is that just looking at the metrics, the last assessment I saw was probably a year and a half or 2 years ago when the study was done. There may have been a more updated one that it's the one that grades the high schools on a 0 to 100 scale. And when it reaches a certain point, lower is worse. Then the state stops reimbursing and it goes downhill from there. And eventually the school is forced to be closed. According to those metrics, the last reports I saw, I'm not saying that Tollgate is in particularly good condition, because it's not, but Pilgrim, according to those metrics that I've seen, is in worse condition. The price of inaction here is that instead of us making a decision is going to be made for us. When a decision is made for us, we're not going to like it. It may involve Pilgrim High School being closed, all of those students going somewhere else, a school building that can actually accommodate them. So what would that look like for those folks who don't have kids going to Pilgrim High, whose kids, if they have kids, are in the part of the school district that would go instead to Tollgate? Would that affect them? Well, it sure would when it comes to taxes, because what happens when a school becomes unaccredited or is forced to close? What do you think happens to property taxes in that area? That area, half of the city that sends its kids to Pilgrim High School. Those property tax rates are going to plummet because the property values are going to plummet because people don't want to see the high school for their section of the city non-accredited or unoccupiable and have to ship their kids to some other town. Can you imagine what would happen to the property taxes? And then think about what happens when property values on one side of the city plummet. The other half of the city ends up making up for that on their property taxes, because we have these revals every 3 years and it has to balance out somehow. When you have one half go way down, the other half ends up having to make up for some difference there. This isn't a situation where we get to tread water. The school, Pilgrim High School, Tollgate 2, their condition is going to get worse, not better. It's not going to just stay the same if we don't give it any attention. We have to do something here, or a decision is going to be made for us, and it's not going to be pretty. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Lattiser. You're muted, Councilman.
You missed the best part of my conversation. Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to summarize my position on this. So first of all, this bond is going to be repaid in 20 years. I think someone might have mentioned longer term, but we're talking about a 20-year repay. And to put it a little bit more in perspective, just with the school bond, we could be looking at somewhere in the vicinity of about $1.50 price increase, a tax increase. If we were to have to implement a maximum tax increase based upon the levy numbers we received tonight, if my numbers are correct, that's about a 94% maximum tax increase. That translates into a $2.44 tax increase. On that $300,000 home that was used as an example prior of increasing about $350 to $400, it could be more like $700 to $750. I don't disagree with the majority of my colleagues, the school committee, the administration, regarding our needs for a new school, perhaps two new schools. My position on this is, I feel this is a huge issue. It's about two buildings right now, what we're talking about, but it's also about the future of our city. It's also about the taxpayers future as well. We're talking long-term results or impacts on what we do or don't do. I personally do not feel that the people that had elected me want me to make that decision for them. This is such a huge decision. It is such a huge impact on the future of our city. My feeling is that this needs to go to the voters. The voters need to make that decision. I don't feel that's our job. Some people may say, well, that's who you got elected for. I disagree with that when it comes to this matter. Yes, it's our responsibility to protect the taxpayers' pocketbooks as best we can, sharpen the pencil on the prices of tires and sand and fire trucks and police cars, et cetera, et cetera, and to legislate. I agree with all of that. But this has such a far-reaching effect on future generations, not just us here today. It has a huge impact on future generations. There's been comments about, well, people who don't have kids in school, you know, they're going to be particularly upset. Well, here's my feeling on that. When my two children were going through the Warwick school system, we got an outstanding education. We had a lot of people my age who were paying taxes to send those kids to school. It's my turn now to pay my share of the taxes for your kids to go to school. This is not something that is subjective. This is something that we have a responsibility for. And I don't mean to preach to anyone. I'm just trying to get my message across that, A, first and foremost, I wanted to be sure we were in the right position for voting on this action tonight. I do not, nor do I intend or want to stop this process from going forward. No, I have no intentions of wanting to do that. But what I do feel that is critically important is that we as a governing body, we as the elected officials in the city of Warwick, let's put it in the hands of the taxpayers. Let's trust the taxpayers to vote and give us the direction of what they want, as opposed to impacting the future of our city, of our people for generations to come. I don't think that decision should be made by nine people, no matter who those nine people are. My personal feelings is we have an obligation to send this to the taxpayers. The taxpayers have the responsibility of telling us what they want. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you very much. At this time, I would like to open this up to members of the public. Thank you for participating this evening. So we are on Zoom here. So if you want to raise your hand here, and I believe Chris from MIS is our moderator this evening, or is in control here, so he can unmute people. And if you just want to call on people, and again, the only thing being debated this evening is whether the city council is going to support the application for the stage two to ride. So that is what the decision, there will be no final decision on the schools this evening. This is just being asked this evening if the city council supports the application moving forward in the process. So Chris or Phil, if you want to let the first person in, and if you could just identify yourself for the record, so the city clerk has that information.
RC, could you please unmute?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, Councilman. This is Bob Cushman, former Warwick School Committee Chairman and City Council member. Just a quick brief statement, and I want to get into the city's borrowing capacity. I've been looking at the independent auditor's report that was distributed to the council on June 30th of 2021. There's some interesting things I wanted to discuss. But, you know, first, I almost want to just apologize to the kids of the city, because I think, you know, over the last 20 years, the city and the school leaders, we've kind of let the kids down. we haven't had this long-term planning necessary to address these things. And, you know, I would look at a maximum tax increase now gets us $8 million. And just the spending alone for the borrowing cost is going to be like two times of a maximum tax increase. When we look at all the other spending in the city, we could be going up to a three-time maximum tax increase. So one recommendation I would make is that I really think, you know, after this process gets done, that the city and the schools get together and put a combined 5- and 10-year plan together with all these variables, all these new spending variables, all these new borrowing variables. So you can actually present to the public what all this stuff's going to actually cost. So with that being said, I want to dive right into the city borrowing capacities. And I got some quick questions, and I just hopefully I can get yes, no answers, because I know my time is limited. So did the school committee, building committee investigate the legal debt limit of the city before making a recommendation to borrow hundreds of millions of dollars to build two new high schools?
We have someone from the school committee that can answer that question.
Council President, I'll answer that. No, I don't believe we explored the city's debt limit capacity. Okay. Although I was not the chair at the time, there was a previous chair to me when this process started. So as far as I know, it wasn't, but I'd have to ask the previous chair.
Hey, can I just ask, just identify yourself when you answer a question. Some people are on the phone here. They might not be able to see you. So
apologies. Dave Testa, building committee chair and school committee member.
Okay. Thank you, Council President. This is another question to you, the chair. Has the city council investigated other borrowing priorities in the city and the effect that borrowing hundreds of millions of dollars for the new high schools will have on the borrowing capacity for those other projects?
The city council asked for the finance department to provide us this information that he presented this evening.
Okay. Thank you. Does RIDE factor in the city's borrowing capabilities into stage two decision?
Someone from the school committee?
Steve Gothberg, Director of Construction. Yes, there has to be a plan put together with the finance director from both the city and the school department.
Okay. If the city does not have the capability to borrow the funds necessary to construct the two schools, could that jeopardize RIDE's approval of the stage two application?
I believe it could.
Okay, so this is what I want to get into right now. So if you go into the financial report of the city, it starts breaking down what the borrowing capability of the city of Warwick is. So does anybody on this call know what the legal limit is and how it is determined for the borrowing capability of the city? I think the Council President, you're on mute.
Oh, sorry about that. Do we have anyone from the administration who'd like to answer that question? Mr. Schaefer, you're on mute.
There we go. You know, if you look at the standard operating procedure now is the language of the referendum and the language authorizing you borrowing exempts the city from the charter provisions of borrowing. Now, I'm not saying that's the right way to be done, but that's the way it's done in almost all cities and towns. So that the charter provisions relating to the state law provisions relating to debt limit don't usually apply. Now, we just went through a rating review last week with S&P. Our debt levels are not burdensome relative to the standards that they're looking at, but obviously, and they ask questions about, are you considering doing something else? Now we've got another $56 million in authorization we haven't borrowed yet. This would obviously, they would be asking a lot of questions about this, but I don't think the state law provisions aren't really relevant to this. What's relevant is what's the tax capacity of the city to support that kind of debt.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Schaefer. So I wanna read from page 11, of the June 30th Independent Auditor's Report. And what it says, quote, state statute limits the amount of bonds a governmental entity can issue to 3% of the total assessed valuation. So if you go on and look through the document, it actually gives you the formula that it uses for the city. So there's something called Note 6 on, and that's on page 43. And what it looks at, the total gross assessed value of all the property in city, it's about $11.1 billion. It subtracts out $500 million for exemptions, and it gets to the net assessed value of $10.6 million approximately. So when you multiply that by 3%, you come out to the debt limitation of the city by law is $319 million. So that's documented in that financial report. Now, what Mr. Schaefer, you just alluded to is what they also do in that report is they subtract out the current debt outstanding for general obligation bonds in the city, which is $57 million. So basically, that nets out the debt limit of the city to $262 million. So now my question is on the schedule of bonds payable. Mr. Schaefer, you put $56 million, I think you talked about in your memo, and I did see that. And that's actually in the financial report as new money that came in. So I think that was from the 2020 bond. But they also have $27 million of school renovation bonds that they have that have not been approved. Just a quick question. Has that money been approved by the council for school renovations? It's part of the $96 million in elementary and middle school borrowing.
The council just approved 2-3 months ago, $26.9 million. We're going through that right now.
Okay, so if we take that away, just like we took the other $57 million, and then if the council approves the $56 million that you've already just discussed, and I think you have in your memo, that puts our debt limit at $180 million. So now these are not my numbers. I didn't make these up. So my question is, you're going to be submitting this stage two, packet of information asking to borrow up to $350 million. And right now we can borrow up to 262 according to the financial statements. Well, actually it's less than that with the 26 million. So, you know, my question is basically based on the city's financial documents, we can only borrow up to 25 million. So is there a way that we can legally go over that?
Yes.
And how do we do that?
The answer is that the act of the General Assembly typically, and it's for most municipalities, provides an exemption from the state law. And once the General Assembly passes that, it no longer applies. And that's common practice.
So we're saying now, you release the $27 million. If you release the $56 million, that's 180. You're actually talking about then putting an additional, I don't know, 200 and something more million. What would that put us up to? That would put us up to like about 400-500 million.
I understand, but that limit, the 3% limit will not apply.
No, I understand that. But what I'm saying is we have to pay those bills. It's like, you know, you keep opening up credit cards, right? We got to pay the principal and interest on it. Yeah. So my point of this whole discussion is that, is there going to be some kind of statement put into that document that says that the city school department will go, does the city council and the mayor have to approve that, I guess, overage of the debt limit in the city?
Yes.
So as part of that stage two application, the city would have to do that, right?
No, as I discussed in my communication and I discussed with the council, there's two bites at the apple here. This is to send it to stage two. Then at some point, if there was agreement on the final plans and the documentation that's been talked about here, the school committee would come back to the council and there would be a decision made whether to present a referendum to the people. And that the language of that referendum would almost certainly provide an exemption on the 3% state statutory cap.
Okay. So, and thank you, Mr. President, for, I think someone had their hand up. You want me to hold on?
Go ahead. Please continue.
Okay, so the other thing I just wanted to talk about to wrap things up is I've been looking at the city budget over the last few years, and I know we increased our general fund bond liability by $4.2 million. We're borrowing more money. And I've been keeping track of the city budget for almost 20 years now. We're at a highest amount of debt, of principal and interest payments in the city. We're spending $9 million. I look at the lease purchase amounts, and we're at $1.9 million, almost $2 million for lease purchases. I'm looking at the financial statement. It's called note number 9, and it's saying that the city's going to need $3.4 million for lease purchases. That's just what we have on the books now. That wouldn't count any other new lease purchases that you know, continue to do. So I'm looking at the school committee fiscal impact, the teacher's contract. They're saying they're going to need $2 million in 8 years. The school's five-year plan shows that they're going to be increasing their spending $5 million a year for the next 5 years. City healthcare costs are going up $2 million a year. This city budget this year increased spending by $7 million. So realistically, this is just off the top of my head. To me, it wouldn't be unrealistic to say that the cities and schools combined spending could be over $10 million a year. And like I said, when I first started this, we're talking about a maximum tax increase of $8 or $9 million. So I think the one thing that can do, and you're probably going to move this along because I understand what you're trying to do in terms of getting the best rates and whatever. But in the meantime, I think the school, the city should immediately bring in, if you had to bring in outside consultants or let Mr. Schaefer do it. It's not too hard to set up some kind of a model where you could plug all these variables in and we could let the taxpayers and everybody know when this bond or whatever this comes before the city council again, what is the total spending we're going to need in the city in 5 to 10 years? Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Chris, if you can let the next speaker, and please identify yourself for the record.
Rob Cody, please unmute.
Good evening, council members and school committee members. My name is Rob Cody. I'm from Ward 7. And I have been an outspoken advocate for new schools for at least a dozen years. I've spoken publicly at council meetings and at school committee meetings. And it's well known that to entice families to come to a community, schools are typically the first things that they look at. But you have to look at all aspects of it, because when intelligent families are thinking about moving to Warwick because we have new schools, that's admirable, right? However, the flip side to that is when the construction cost of those schools caused the tax rate to be escalated above the maximum tax increase year after year, that becomes a detrimental aspect of families that are considering coming to Warwick. So that's something that we really have to look at. The other thing that we have to look at is, you know, it's no secret that the educational practice in Warwick has been declining and our scores have been declining for years, every year, right? And this year was no different. Yet, you know, part of the problem is our expenses that we have. And every year, although our grades keep declining in terms of proficiency, we keep giving out raises and more raises, which impacts the bottom line of what we have to spend on our children. But I wanted to give you a little bit of background on myself, because I know I'm the guy that's known as the guy that's the bearer of bad news. But let me give you a little bit of my expertise. I work in construction management as an owner's representative, as a structural inspector of record. I've been doing it for 30 years. In the past 12 to 15 years, the vast majority of my work has been on school construction projects. I've been involved in over 24 new school construction projects, a handful of high school projects, a handful of elementary and middle school projects, and also several technical school projects. One of the things that they have in common with, and by the way, all in Massachusetts, one of the things that they have in common is the formula that they used for the basis of the constructability and the cost on the project. In high schools, they have been using the formula. This was up until the middle of 2021. The formula was number of students times 225 square feet per student times $400 to $420 per square foot. So I'd like to just give you a example of how that's changing. And as you all know, middle schools and elementary schools, it's the same basic formula, but there's a little difference. The amount of square footage per student is a little less and the cost per square foot is a little less. I'm involved in a project right now, new construction of a high school. It's 425,000 square feet, state of the art. And they estimated this project, which was approved a year and a half ago, at $225 a square foot. $225 square foot per student times the number of students times $420 per square foot of construction. Just since that project has been approved, the commodities escalation has gone from $425 a square foot to $691 a square foot. And it's escalated the cost of that project from $169 million to $293,400,000 because of commodities escalations. So we don't have any of that information or any of that data tonight, but what I'd like to know from the Director of Capital Projects, what number are you using in terms of construction per square foot?
Good evening, Rob. Steve Gothberg, Director of Construction and Capital Projects. How are you?
How are you, Steve? Nice to speak with you.
Same here. We are, square footage per student is dictated by RIDE. So standard high school is 185 square foot per student as dictated by RIDE. Because of our inclusion of career and tech into our schools, we are looking closer to the 215 to 220 square foot per student range. We're looking at $700 per square foot for construction costs.
So that's a huge escalation as compared to a year and a half ago. It's almost double. And as everybody knows, once this is approved, the cost escalations in every project I've ever seen happen in Warwick, there's never been a commodities escalation clause that protects the taxpayer. I've actually been on projects where I've seen an architect come in and say, well, we're going to change the entire entrance foyer, and the taxpayer comes out with another $230,000, $240,000 because of architectural changes. So once this passes, we don't know what we're on the hook for. And for example, Steve, what I'd like to ask you, what's the estimate on the tonnage of steel for the Pilgrim School, for example?
We're not there at that point. I don't have a tonnage estimate. We're at schematic design at this point.
But you do have O'Day engineers involved in the project, and they haven't given you an estimate on tons of steel?
Not that I am aware of. I can bring the architect in if you give me a second.
Okay.
Hi, yeah, this is Steve Guglielmo, architect with Sekosho and Associates.
Hi, Steve.
Hi. We do have some information from the structural engineers. We've sent it over to the estimators. I don't have the tonnage readily available, but I could get that for you. We have an estimator working on the estimates as we speak.
Okay, so have you sent out any RFPs to any fabricators yet?
No. Okay. We're doing everything through our estimator in Boston.
Okay, so I would expect then that as of this date right now, you don't have a cost per ton for fabrication, correct?
Not per ton, no. We could check with the estimators. He didn't give us all his information yet. He just gave us a preliminary report today, and we should be getting his final report within the next couple of days.
So basically, the cost of this school project that you're projecting is based upon that formula of number of students times square footage times build up times you build out per square foot, correct?
Yes, it's based on the number of students by the square footage number. The numbers we're getting in right now for construction for, say, the Tollgate School is $487 a square foot. And then you factor everything in with escalation and overhead and profit, you're up at $678 a square foot.
That's just enormous commodities escalation. that the taxpayer, I don't see how the taxpayer will be able to burden this. So if you look at Mr. Schaefer's breakdown, you know, he has the best case scenario at 13.5 million, worst case scenario at 19.5 million. Let's just go in the middle for a second and just speculate, because that's what we're doing, right? Everything that we're doing tonight is speculation. But if you look at 16 million, right, that the cost of this school over the 20-year bond is going to cost us $16 million a year, the city can only raise 8.6 million with a maximum tax increase every year. So, I mean, to me, this says we're going to get walloped with tax increases, right? And as it is, as of this date, the number of enrollment of students continues to decline. What do you think is going to happen when prospective young families looking at Warwick and they're seeing tax increases year after year after year with no end in sight? Because, I mean, this situation with these schools and the ramifications to the tax base is going to become very, very public, right? So the general public is not going to say, well, if we build it now, it'll cost us less than if we build it in 2 years. They're not going to say that. They're going to look at the ramifications to their immediate budget. And I can tell you, I was totally against the rehabilitation of Warwick Vets. In my opinion, that building should have been bulldozed down in the early 70s, all right? And for the reasons that Councilman Sinapi spoke about, I spoke about that years and years ago, continue to dump money into buildings that just don't support it. So I think, you know, and as I watched the video of the Pilgrim School, you know, it's all nice. And, you know, when you have the wish list and you want all these wonderful, beautiful things, it's great to wish for all these things when you're not even looking at how much it's going to cost everybody. And, you know, one of the things that really kind of sent me a curveball was that we've included a rock climbing wall in the boulevard of the school. I wonder if anybody has really thought about the liabilities associated with a rock climbing wall in the school. I mean, that, to me, I really was taken back on, you know, the thought of installing a rock climbing school, a rock climbing wall within the school. So that's a problem. So I'm a member of the American Welding Society, Society of Non-Destructive Testing. And I was asked in October to give a seminar to all of the inspectors in this area, in the New England area, on structural inspection and the problems that we're having today. And I can tell you this, what we have seen in the last 10 years is the quality of workmanship has plummeted on the structural side. And I've talked to certain council members about my experience and some of the things that I've gone through. And it's really unfortunate that the quality of work that we're getting now is really, the only word that I can use is deplorable. When we go into some of these buildings, these new construction buildings, we've got 80%, 90% sometimes of rejections of lack of code compliance. And it takes us weeks, if not months, to get clarifications from the engineers of records, whether it be a field fix that's required because of a misfabrication or a welding of the structure that does not meet the minimum basic code requirements. And part of that problem is because we just don't have the skilled technicians in the field anymore. And just in welders alone, New England is short like 150,000 welders, right? On the projects that we're on now, they're not on time and they're not on budget because of factors like this. And just a word on time and on budget. On all of the projects that I have been on, where the projects are bid by the general contractor in a flat bid, all right, a not to exceed bid, the vast majority of those projects come in on time and under budget. And as a matter of fact, I did the Lexington School last year, which is a school for 900 kids, middle school, 22,000 square foot community center, performing arts, theater, gymnasium. And by the way, it was powered geothermal heating electric, 100 heating and cooling geothermal. It came in $2 million under budget at $64 million. On each project that I have presided over as the structural inspector of record that I have to sign the building off, and on top of the general contractor, we have a construction manager. Every one of those jobs comes in over budget and not on time, because we're adding an extra layer of bureaucracy. And typically what happens in the construction management is we load up these projects with young kids that are just breaking into the construction management industry. So the addition of a CM on top of the general contractor in reality adds an extra cost to the project. And that extra cost is borne by the taxpayer. So it's something that we have to look at.
Thank you very much, sir. We're going to move on to the next.
I have one other
caller. Thank you very much. Your time is allotted, so we're going to go to the next caller. Chris?
Caller 8281, please press *6 to unmute.
Hi, Barbara Walsh. I'm sorry to be taking time from Rob Cody, because it sounds like he had a lot of valuable stuff to ask about. I do not. My question is a process question, although I have a lot of substantive issues with this whole thing. I think it was poorly done. I think it's being poorly managed. And I have a lot of concerns about the money and the need as designed. But my question is, if you go ahead and proceed with allowing this to go to RIDE for step two, they approve it, and now it comes back to you, council members. Are you then bound to what was sent to them and approved, or at that point, can you make substantive changes in the plans, or are you bound by two new schools and the designs of the schools, the costs of the schools, as we are hearing them tonight and we heard in the past?
Good evening, Mrs. Walsh. So, yeah, the City Council, again, this evening, as you mentioned, we are just voting on whether we support the application to move forward for stage two. If at that time, RIDE, if that were to pass, then RIDE would review this. If they agree and accept the application, it would then come back to the City Council. And then the only thing we would be able to vote on is whether or not to send that send the recommendation asking the General Assembly to put that on the ballot. The City Council cannot make any substantive changes to the application itself. So the two-step process on the council's part is what's up before us this evening is, do we support or not support the application moving forward to RIDE? And if that is supported and then it does come back from RIDE, the City Council will then have a piece of legislation which will be debated on of whether or not to ask the General Assembly to put that on the ballot.
But if you vote to put it on the ballot, it's as RIDE approves it, correct?
Correct. It'll be the plan and the application that was approved by RIDE.
So your hands are tied.
Correct.
So where is the opportunity for citizens and the council to try to get substantive changes in this mess? There isn't any.
Yeah, I mean, the school committee has had numerous meetings on this, public comments. They had public forums dating back a couple of years on this. So they have done their procedure. But for the city council members, those are just the two things that we have authority over.
So this whole process is really a moot point from the perspective of citizens who have concerns about space or taxes or what's in the building or anything. So any of the concerns raised by any of us are kind of like, oh, ho, hum, they're moot points, nothing we can do about any of that.
At this time in the application, again, if it were to go forward and then it would go before the, would be on the ballot, then every voter and taxpayer would have a say because they would vote on it one way or the other.
Yeah, but it could have been enhanced by making changes at different points rather than saying it's all or nothing, which is what's being said right now as written. It's all or nothing. It proceeds or it doesn't. If it does proceed and RIDE accepts it, which they will, sends it back to you guys, you have one decision. ask the General Assembly to pass it or not to pass it. You will ask them to pass it, and then it's up to the citizens to try to do catch up with all the issues that were raised tonight and not even raised yet, because there are more concerns. This is a terrible process. Can I make a suggestion to you guys?
Yep, this is
try to get
forum.
Rid of the school committee. You guys take this over with the mayor's office. This is awful, the whole process. And it puts citizens in a terrible position. So it's almost like you're for kids or you're against kids. Regardless of the price, regardless of the costs, regardless of the debt, you're putting people in a position to say we're for kids or we're against kids. And that's not fair. And that's my naive comment.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate you taking the time to contact us. Chris, if you can let the next caller in, please.
Rick Casella, please unmute.